Yeah, check it, yeah, check it, yeah. I'm still holed up, sitting alone, ready to go nuts, slaving over the hot stove.
You are listening to Migrant Matters Radio on CFRU 93.3 FM. We're presenting to you today a recording of the second annual May Day dinner and panel in Guelph, titled Speaking from the Forefront of the Struggle for Immigrant Justice and Workers' Rights. This panel was organized by the local migrant worker justice group Fuerza Puerza, meaning strength in Spanish and Tagalog. Tagalog is a main dialect spoken in the Philippines. Fuerza Puerza is an all-volunteer grassroots group of community members in Guelph dedicated to exposing the injustices faced by migrant workers, non-status people, and racialized working-class immigrants. Above all and central to Fuerza Puerza's work is to be an effective ally to migrant racialized working-class people themselves, prioritizing their dignity and agency. This panel was recorded in April 2010 and features speakers representing the independent, humanitarian, solidarity-based organizations No One Is Illegal Toronto, Canadian Humanitarian Appeal for the Relief of Tamils, more popularly known as Canadian HART, the acronym HART, Migrante Ontario, and the Communist Party of Canada. Each share the experiences of their communities as being comprised of racialized, working class and poor immigrants and migrants in Canada, illustrating the hardships, inequalities, racism, and other abuses inherent in the process of forced migration to Canada. They also examine the recent changes in the Canadian immigration system and focus on the work that grassroots, anti-oppressive community organizations have and are doing in Southern Ontario to create change.
Yeah, check it, yeah. Yeah, I'm still holed up, sitting alone, ready to go nuts, slaving over the hot stove, cooking up cold cuts. Yeah, so much for trying to keep out of trouble, cause I'm bored. Listen now, get the beat, let's run up here.
Migrante Ontario is an alliance of organizations working for the rights and welfare of migrants in Ontario through various initiatives such as organizing, education, training, and advocacy. Migrante Ontario works closely with other migrant justice and workers' rights groups in Montreal, Winnipeg, and BC, and is part of Migrante International, a network of anti-imperialist Filipino-led grassroots organizations with presence in Asia, the US, Europe, and the Middle East. Maru Mesa is a migrant advocate who is active with Migrante Ontario, and she is currently working under Canada's Living Caregiver Program. Maru joined us to shed light on the devastation stemming from forced migration and to discuss Migrante Ontario's work in Southern Ontario to create change, stressing that there is more change and support needed. It is this talk that we present to you now on Migrant Matters Radio, broadcasting from Guelph's community radio station, CFRU
93.3 FM. Lads to think the bad. You can try it if you fancy, so see, I got the saffron, I got the...
My name is Maru Maisa of Migrante Ontario. And as you may know, Migrante Ontario is an alliance of organizations working for the rights and welfare of Filipino migrants and its families. And I'm also a member of one of the members of the organizing committee of the Independent Workers Association. It is an organization of caregivers known as supporters in upholding the rights and welfare of caregivers. Sorry, because I'm a little bit nervous because it is my first time to speak.
We love you.
And I have a little bit difficulties in using a foreign language. So, but I promise I will try my best as much as I can to deliver my message for you to understand. Okay? I would like to share with you about myself, my history of migration, how I started. My very first 4 years, I started to work in Singapore for 4 years. That was my very first time to work abroad. And I work as a domestic helper in Singapore. why I leave our country. As you may know, there are more than 4,500 Filipinos leaving our country every day because of the need for survival. Because in our country, there is no jobs. Unemployment is rampant. There is poverty, landlessness, and lack of job of security. And I'm one of those 4,500 Filipinos left our country. And my very first country, and the very first country that I worked was in Singapore. At first, it is a need why I work abroad, because there was a responsibility resting on my shoulder, because I need to help my family and my aging parents. So I decided to go to Singapore. But in Singapore, the situation of domestic helpers are not really good. First, the salary are very low, that you cannot even provide sufficient, you cannot even provide the needs of your family. So after 4 years, I assessed my situation. So I decided to go in Hong Kong, because in Hong Kong, there's a little bit different in terms of salary. It's the salary given in Hong Kong is higher than in Singapore. So after 4 years working in Singapore, I left Singapore and worked in Hong Kong for 10 years. And for 10 years, I also noticed that my life doesn't change. I'm still poor, and I'm still getting poorer and poorer. You know, I even cannot provide my family enough. I mean, I stayed in Hong Kong for 10 years. When I stayed there, I saw the situation of my fellow Filipino migrants. Abuse were rampant, low salary, and domestic workers are not treated properly. The people in Hong Kong or the local people in Hong Kong discriminate us. There is a racial discrimination. And also...
You're doing great!
But when I was in Hong Kong, I have the desire to go in Canada, because I heard from so many friends that in life in Canada is different from Singapore and in Hong Kong. So even though, because of the situation of migrant people in Hong Kong, I joined the organization. So because of my own situation, I was encouraged to join the organization, which is also a migrante. From there, I've learned how to organize. From my own experience, I shared with my fellow migrant people my experiences, and from the organizers in Hong Kong, I've learned that we Filipino migrants have to educate ourselves, organize, and mobilize to fight and to wage our rights and welfare. Because if you don't educate yourself, organize yourself, there will be... Doon ko kasi nakita sa Hong Kong na hindi mo makakamit yung gusto mong ipaglaban kung hindi ka matututo na lumaban at hindi mo ipaglalaban yung mga karapatan at kagalingan.
That's where I saw that it's only in struggling and fighting that we could achieve our rights and in our welfare.
Tumakbo yun ng 10 years, yung pag-organize ako doon.
I've been organizing for 10 years.
For 10 years. And after 10 years, I assess myself that it's nothing happened. No, my life, yung buhay ko, yung takbo ng buhay ko, hindi na bago in terms of economic needs, it didn't change. No, so I decided to apply here in Canada because, as I told you before, I've heard in so many friends that life here in Canada is better than in Hong Kong or in Singapore, and the salary given here in Canada is higher in Hong Kong, and also there is a chance for you to acquire permanent residence. So that's it. I decided to apply and I got an employer, and the very first time I stepped in the airport, I encounter a Filipina, and she was complaining that she is released upon arrival, that she was released upon arrival. So I was thinking that, I thought Canada is a better place to work for migrants. I didn't know that there is a cases like this. So after that, I take it for granted. But habang tumatagal, as time goes by, especially when I joined the Migrante and Independent Workers Association, I saw many caregivers. Maraming caregivers ang nagkakaroon ng problema.
There are a lot of caregivers that experience problems.
Lots of problems in terms of their status, and there are lots of caregivers are victims of abuse. No. And there are also when you say abuse, it is broad, right? Abuse in terms of their salaries. Many are underpaid. Many are overworked. Many are experienced sexual harassment. So that made me inspired to continue what I did in Hong Kong, to join the migrants group here to organize people and to educate them. So, yun, nag-join ako.
I joined.
Sa ngayon, yun ang ginagawa ko, nag-organize.
Okay. At this point, I continue organizing.
Yes. And also, what we suffer right now here in Canada or every part of the world, the abuse that we... Because I believe for three countries that I work with, there are abuses. Migrant workers are abused. There is a common problem, right? But with different particularities. So I believe that those abuse and violations that or sufferings that Filipino migrant workers are encountering is due to our government lack of protection, and also because of the root cause of migration in our country. The root cause of migration in our country is because of the labor export program that are being intensified by our government. Because of our billion worth of dollars remittances and the kinikita nila sa mga pagpoproseso ng aming mga papel.
And how much did they profit from just processing our documents before we leave our country?
Ay, ginawa nilang systematic yung pag-export ng mga tao.
They
systematize.
This government has systematized the export of people.
Yes. That's why dun sa pagtukoy namin ng mga problema dito, hindi rin namin isinasantabi yung problema sa Pilipinas.
When we point out our problems here, what we experience here, we always link it to our problems in the Philippines.
And yun nga, sa nakita ko,
from what I see,
ito yung dapat gawin na okay. And talking about the new live-in caregiver changes, I myself question, are these changes really fix the problems in LCP? As you know, one of the changes, some of the changes are the Juana Tejada Law, the 3,900 hours, and the 4 years extension. I myself question, are these changes really substantial or fix the problems in LCP? Because as I experience talking with, or as I heard, or the experiences of some caregivers, the most of the plight of caregivers are the they are tied in one employer, or the temporary work permit tied to the employer. Family separation and reunification, overcharging of agencies, lack of services of both Canadian government and the Philippine government. So I believe that changes, hindi iyon yung tamang changes na changes. Dapat binago.
The changes that I see is not the right changes that they should have changed.
Although it is a hard-won victory, or shall I call a partial victory after so many years, at least there was a change. But for me, the Canadian government should be a fundamental change, and I believe permanent stat. There should be an open permit to avoid, you know, because right now. Since it is the work permit is tied is only to one employer, the tendency is a caregiver will, you know, even though she work longer, she will take the abuse because she, for her desire to finish the 3 years, right? As a caregiver, I would like to remind or the Canadian government that despite of the economic times, they are fortunate enough to be one of the wealthiest country in this world. And with that wealth comes a responsibility for them to ensure that everyone in this country, regardless of means and background, must be treated fairly and must be respect. So for me, even though there, with these newly changes policies, we're not going to. It's not the end of our call. We will still call. We will still pagpapatuloy namin yung aming panawagan para sa isang sa isang pagbabago na.
We will continue our call for. For change.
Na magga-garantya ng protection para sa mga living caregivers.
Protection for living caregivers like me.
Like me, yeah. That's all.
Obsessed and sand, blood, sweat, your tears off, and the next electrical implants and all that. I can tell you, your fingers sore lack. Yeah. The grand hustle is the jack muscles. I'm the torch, shot the time into his quarters for a short night. Hold the roll in a poor mag. Yeah, read between the lines, make like a big book, man, and you'll see in time. Really, I'm being chased by CGI like sad.
Liz Rowley is the Ontario leader of the Communist Party of Canada. She has been very active in the fight for workers' rights, civil and human rights, and local democracy. The Communist Party is continuously putting in the work for a new direction in government that puts people's needs ahead of corporate greed and that can begin to overcome the devastation wrought by neoliberal policies and governments over the past 3 decades. Liz joined us to speak on workers' rights, or the lack thereof, in Ontario, and about the importance of solidarity between Canadian workers and their migrant worker sisters and brothers. It is this talk that we present to you now on Migrant Matters Radio, broadcasting from Guelph's Community Radio, CFRU 93.3 FM.
Would like to thank the organizers of this meeting for organizing it and allowing all of us to have the opportunity to hear the speakers who have spoken tonight. These are people that you won't usually hear on the radio or television, nor me. You'll not usually hear me either on the radio or television, although I think the what we're hearing tonight is pretty important. I was asked to say a few words about the origins of Mayday. And some of you may know this already, but as someone said earlier, it's 120 years old. And actually, it originated in North America. And it was originated by early socialists and trade unionist workers, many of them immigrants to this country, either first generation or second or third generation, because as my brother here noted, we're all immigrants in this country unless we are first people. And those people in 1890 saw the same things that we're seeing here tonight. That is to say that working people, whatever their place of origin, whatever their skin color, whatever their mother tongue, are as exploited, maybe more exploited today, but they were pretty exploited in 1890. And they came to, I don't know, the breaking point where they said enough is enough, and that they were going to make demands that would fundamentally bring about fundamental change. As others have said here tonight, we need fundamental change. And they asked for, good grief, the eight-hour day. The eight-hour day. And they mobilized, and hundreds of people came out to Haymarket Square, and a provocateur threw a bomb. And that gave the opportunity to the police, who were massed in great numbers waiting for the event, to move in. And eight of these people were killed, and many more were injured and hurt and jailed. And that was the opening shots for the fight for the eight-hour day. And I was thinking back to the 1990s when Mike Harris, when the conservatives were in power, the same people, by the way, many of the same people, Baird and two-tier Tony Clement, and who's the third one I'm missing here? Flaherty. Who was it?
Flaherty.
Flaherty, thank you, the former. These are the guys who brought us the 60-hour work week in Ontario. And the Liberals, who were elected in 2003 and promised, and got elected essentially on the promise that they were going to reverse all that, did change the 60-hour work week. But what they didn't change was the overtime provisions, which don't kick in Ontario until you hit 60 hours. So de facto, we have a 60-hour work week in Ontario, right? You know how that works. And if you're a person without status, well, 60 is probably just the beginning, just the door open. So we are celebrating May Day today with the same kind of, you know, this is a day of assessment, if you will. It's sometimes it's a happy day, often it ain't. So I don't want to say happy May Day to you. I want to bring you greetings on May Day from the Communist Party and sort of say, where are we at? Because that's what you do on May Day. You kind of assess, where are we at in this struggle of working people versus, in this century, multinational corporations with operations all over the world, willing to exploit and extort and oppress in every way that they can working people wherever they live. They're equal opportunity exploiters and oppressors in this regard. recently, and not for the first time in the last year, I was in Sudbury. And you probably won't know, although I'll be curious how many of you do know, that there is a strike going on up there, which is now in its 10th month. And walking the picket lines with the miners and smelter workers in Sudbury, they expect to be out another 6 months. And they're facing off against a bazillion multinational corporation which is a multinational in every respect. It doesn't operate in 2 or 3 countries or 10 or 12 countries. It operates in 40 or 50 countries. It's happy to exploit the natural resources and the workers who work in those industries right around the world. When they bought the Inco Corporation, and when their buddies from Switzerland, Xstrata, bought the Falconbridge operation, which is the other mining operation in Sudbury, all of Sudbury ceased to be Canadian nickel mining. It all became foreign owned. And it was, of course, the people who approved that were the current Conservative government. The guys who did it to us in Ontario 15 years ago are now doing it to the whole country. And they said, sure, well, you sign on the dotted line here saying that you promise to keep your investments in Canada, and we don't know what else is in the agreement because it's a secret agreement, although by now you'd think it would be public after everything this company has done. And allowed them to take over the entire nickel industry, big part of mining in this country. Likewise, U.S. Steel took over just down the road here from you, an hour from here or less, in Hamilton, the last remaining Canadian steel operation. And the first thing they did was lay everybody off, and they brought back 800 people just recently, and the reason was not that they wanted to start producing steel again, because there's, you know, with the economic recession, their homeland is in the U.S. and it's U.S. steel workers they're hiring first, although most of them are non-union, and they make non-union wages. But they brought back 800 because they discovered that there were laws in this country which would make it more expensive for them to actually terminate these people and pay them severance and so on, and the poor laws that we have here are actually stronger here than they are in the States, and it would be cheaper for them to bring them back for a few months so that they could re-qualify for employment insurance and just do that for a while, right? Until maybe they figure they can undo some of the weak labor laws that we have here. So 10 months in, what's this big strike all about? How many of you know about this strike, by the way? Oh, you're a well-educated lot, I see. Better than the community that you come from, I would dare say. This strike is about pensions. That's essentially what it's about. Many of the strikes that are taking place now are about pensions. And pensions aren't a benefit. They're deferred wages. Those are wages that are owed to those workers. It's not something that they're getting that's extra. And all of these companies now are trying to change the pension plan from what they call defined benefit to defined contribution. You don't need to know all this. What you need to know is that they're trying to take back wages that they owe to those workers. That's plain and simple what it's all about. The same thing is happening in the public sector. That's why we in Sudbury, in Windsor last summer, had the longest strike in Canadian history by public sector workers. That's why last spring, not a year ago, the Canadian government, the U.S. government, all of the big three multinational auto companies put the guns to the head of Canadian auto workers and said, you will forfeit your wages, you will forfeit your pensions, you will forfeit everything we can take off you, because we're in a recession and somebody's got to pay for all those bailouts for the big corporations. And you know, what I want to suggest to you briefly now, because it's late and I know you all want to go home, or maybe you want to lift your arms a bit, I don't know. But what this is about is, it's a massive assault. It's a massive transfer of wealth from one class, working people, to another class. A very small percentage of super wealthy individuals and multinational corporations. What's changed since 1890 or since 1950 is borders have gone down. And capital can move all around the world whenever it wants. Not workers, unless capital wants them to move, in which case they put a lot of strictures on them, as we've already heard here very clearly tonight about the kind of rules that apply to people. It has to do with wage takes backs, not only pensions, but wages, benefits, It has to do with tax shifts. You're about to see on the 1st of July, the HST come in, harmonized sales tax. And you might say, well, what's that got to do with me? What it has to do with you is that corporations that used to pay $4.5 billion in taxes aren't going to pay them anymore, but you will. You'll pay for them. Taxes on just about everything that you buy now are going to go up quite high. And those funds are going to come out of your pocket year after year. And that since it's not just a sales tax, it's a VAT tax, a value-added tax, the government can raise it. They can just raise it. They don't have to ask you. They can just do it. And if you look at countries in Europe and elsewhere that have VAT taxes, you'll see that's the case. There's also in this provincial budget a $4.5 billion direct giveaway tax giveaway to the corporations. That's $9 bucks. And at the same time, they're telling us that they can't afford to put in place a job creation plan for the people of Ontario. They can't do anything about the 500,000 jobs in manufacturing that have disappeared in Ontario in the last 7 years. They can't do anything about skyrocketing tuition fees. They won't even cap them, let alone turn them back. They can't do anything about health care. In fact, the figures that they put out in the provincial government were designed to scare the dickens out of everybody. How are we going to, 70 cents of every dollar, that's what will go to health care in the future. So obviously it's not sustainable, so you'll have to take less. That's the message. Of course, they forget to say that because of all their tax giveaways to the big corporations and lots more, loopholes and all the rest of it, that the pie is shrinking. So if you shrink the pie in terms of revenue, of course the expenditure is going to look bigger because the pie is smaller. And who did that? Who was it who turned the taps off and said, you don't have to pay anymore? You don't have to pay the capital tax for doing that one in, and so on and so forth. So we're in a big battle, and our enemies are bigger than they used to be. They're just as greedy, by the way, but they're bigger because they're multinationals now. And so when you have a company like Vale Inco in Sudbury, Canadian operations, which are pretty important to Canada, are only 3% of its operations in nickel worldwide. They got deep pockets, and they can wait out these workers forever. And that strike could be lost. And if it is lost, what do you think is going to happen? We're going to see defined contribution pension takebacks right across the mining sector, wage cuts right across the mining sector, and right through the public sector. That's already started. That's what the wage freeze is all about. And it isn't a freeze, folks, it's a cut. Because with a 2% increase in inflation every year, which is what projected, it might be higher, that's a wage cut. And if you happen to be a woman working for a city hall or working in a hospital and you're part-time, that works out to a week's wages. So that's a wage cut. So I think everybody here has pretty well got the picture. The question is for us, what to do about it? What to do about it? And that's really difficult if you live in Ontario or if you live in Canada, because there isn't, I dare say, a single government anywhere in Canada which can be clearly identified as being for working people. There isn't even a party, I would say, in office that can be identified as, yeah, they'll do, with all their this's or that's, they'll do for us. Most people don't think that way. And you can see why. Most people might say, well, the NDP, they're probably okay. Well, a lot of people thought that until Bob Rae came along. And very sadly, really sadly, because working people have very few allies these days in office, in government, the NDP leader, Andrea Horwath, said, we're not going to react to the wage freeze. You can't put us in a box, they said to the media. Well, working people across this province could ask, well, why the hell didn't you say something? Why didn't you speak up? What are you there for? Who do you speak for? Who do you speak for? And if Canadians are cynical, by God, there's a good reason. If they're not so interested in racing to the polls, well, I think it's understandable. Nevertheless, we got to do something about parliaments and legislatures. We have to, because if we don't, we're going to see the Harperites not only send the current troops to Afghanistan. Oops, sorry. Carried away there, sorry. It's worth getting carried away for, don't you think? Yes. We have to get out of Afghanistan, and that means we've got to have a government or at least parties with enough votes to do that. And I'm guessing, folks, that in 2011, something is going to happen where we just got to stay there for whatever reasons. It'll be humanitarian or what have you, or whatever they say, but you know what's going to happen. They're going to continue the military exercises.
It's okay. You speak.
Thank you, brother.
You speak.
So it is important who's in government and who's in power, even minority. It's amazing what they've been able to do with the minority. And not only that, they're busily and pretty effectively getting rid of Medicare in this country. The country is being emptied of industry. We're going to be a source of raw resources for the U.S. We're going to have that great big tar sands. It's not an oil sands, it's a tar sands. And they're going to develop it. That's it. They've made that clear. What can we expect from the Liberals? Well, it's sad. It's really sad. I was in some of those meetings around Bill C-50. This is the Immigration Act changes. And in Brampton. And the story from the Liberals there was, we can't just do anything we want to, even though we want to, because we're in a government in waiting and we have responsibilities, and that's why we're going to let it go. And that's why we have Bill C-50. They could have stopped it, but they didn't. So how do we go about changing these governments? Well, to some degree, we have to get people to start looking outside the box. If you settle for what's there, that's what you'll get. So we want people to start looking at policy, voting for policy, and for candidates and parties that are prepared to fight for those policies, like immigration policy. What kind of immigration policy do we want? What kind of Canada do we want? What kind of taxation policy do we want? Well, in our view, we should tax the rich. It's obvious. A taxation policy which will generate revenues to pay for social programs, to roll back tuition fees, to introduce a national child care program, and so on and so forth. It needs money. Where are you going to get it? Well, who makes the money? Last time I looked, there were record profits coming in. Record profits from those big banks and corporations, the one that we just bailed out. So we need a progressive tax policy based on ability to pay, and they're the ones who have the ability to pay. And they're the ones who should pay. And we need a policy, a foreign policy of peace and disarmament. And if we proceed the way that we're proceeding now, folks, it will not be too long before we will be back in the nuclear nightmare. Either we disarm or we'll blow up the world. Somebody's going to do it at some point. You look at Harper, he's one of the guys who might do it. So all of these things. So we think that, you know, a different set of policies. And it's not enough for us to be out in the streets against what they're doing. That's the first step. And there's lots more people who should be out there on the streets against what they're doing. But we also need to have something we're for. We need policies for people that put people's needs, not corporate greed, on the agenda. And we would like to suggest to you that, with all I've said about parliaments, that we aren't the only ones who think this way. We know that there are people in the NDP who are not very happy with what Andrea Horwath said. Or what one of her deputies said on the whole issue of that rotten little motion that was put by Sherman in the Ontario legislature, equating criticism of Israel with hate speech. What was the NDP doing there? That was pretty bad. They need a wake-up call too. So people need to be in the streets. That's what'll change their mind. And I'll give you the proof. You want to know the proof? The proof is that 2 weeks ago, 75,000 people were on the streets in Montreal. And I bet you hardly anybody in English-speaking Canada knows that that happened. And that's the proof. They know that if this is infectious, and I suggest it is infectious, that there are Canadians and working people in English-speaking Canada are not any less militant or any less concerned than people in Quebec. But what they have in Quebec is a labor movement that has put out a call to action across the province. And that's what we need here. We need a coalition of labor, people's organizations, Aboriginal organizations, racialized people, seniors, youth, women, environmentalists, all of the forces that have been negatively affected by these transnational corporations and their agenda of greed, to come together and to organize and mobilize the kinds of actions that we saw during the days of action in the 1990s, where the whole city stopped in Toronto virtually, that last one, and where the next step was to move towards escalating province-wide action. That was the right way to go, and that's the way we have to go now. And the last piece of proof that I'd offer to you is what's happening in Europe. We're not the only people facing these problems, you all know that. And people around the world are struggling. The Cubans have been at it for more than 50 years, successfully, 60 years. The people of Venezuela, struggling. People all over Latin America, changing governments, successfully. That's a real success. And moving in the direction of socialism. People in Europe struggling. Look at what's happening in Greece. Big demonstrations everywhere. And these are people who are organized and mobilized by the labor movement and its allies, a group called PAME, which pulls people out to fight against these austerity programs. And they've been very successful. They've been really successful in mobilizing people. And at some point, you know, the penny drops. It isn't just this government that's rotten. It's the whole bloody system that's rotten and that has to go. And me, I've spent my entire life fighting against capitalism. I'm not going to stop now. And I invite you to join me. And I don't think... and I don't think... just going back to the comments that my brother made here about First Nations people, I agree with that absolutely. But I'm not a colonist, and I bet you aren't either. We are the people who are speaking out against these things, who are fighting these things. If you're fighting it, you're not a part of it. You're on the other side. And you know the old labor side. Which side are you on? Well, we all know which side we are on. The thing now is to mobilize, challenge these governments, change it. The only force that we have is our unity and our mobilization. And that's what brings about change, and that's what we need. Thank you.
Other friends of mine. We're really thankful for everyone's talk and for all your work, your life work. Like, such an inspiration.
We'd also like to thank GERCED and the Critical Knowledge Collective for helping us organize this and providing much needed funds.
And we urge everybody, if anybody is sort of interested in what's going on, to obviously get connected with, you know, the organizations that the speakers represent, but also based in Guelph, to the YCL, to Forza Forza, and any new ideas. Like, we're trying to build, like, you know, this kind of coalition in Guelph, and people looking at what's happening in Guelph and to connect it to the bigger pictures of what's happening, you know, eventually what's happening nationally. So any ideas, any, you know, we have to be imaginative, we have to be creative, and so this is the kind of coalitions we want to bring in. I know that a lot of us have been talking about how on campus, you know, like the conservative sides and like the more sort of really frustrating students and have been very well organized and very well kind of like strong in a lot of their fighting and a lot of the changes that they did to the CSA, to the did around university in the community. So, you know, oftentimes progressive people with really good ideas, we're all scattered and we all have, you know, different, and obviously our experiences are different and, you know, there's different levels of privilege and everything, but it's about time that we start sort of building some sort of coalition and some sort of common ideas. And you know, our idea was that all these speakers bring so many different stories, but they're all functioning on the same system, like a system that is oppressing so many people, that is changing, you know, for the worst, and the only way that we're going to sort of come out of that is by building a strong, kind of like, strong fight back, I guess, right? So everybody in Guelph, yeah, if you're interested, if you're here in the summer, we're going to try to, you know, build more events or just planning, like, you know, organizing and see what people have ideas for next year.
We still have room for the bus that's going to Toronto, so It's 70. What, how many people? Lots of people.
It's like 70 plus.
70 plus. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just email us. We're going to cap it at 1.5. So you really should email foursup.foursup@gmail.com. We have in the back, there's a lot of flyers there. And really learn more about all these organizations.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
As many of you may or may not know, today is the International Day of Mourning for workers who were killed or injured on the job. That's why I'm carrying around these kill worker go to jail posters.
Right.
There was a commemoration, two commemorations today actually, one at the University of Guelph, which I'm happy to say, John and Heather, who's not here anymore, were at, the only two students in attendance. So I was wondering if we could have a minute of silence, actually, to honor our sisters and brothers who have been killed or injured on the job.
Surrounded by tons of students, silent the whole of balloon of sewage. This lab really looks a bit mad. Took a bit on, steady on, 26 cash. A mishmash, a mismatch, kid is the live fast. Picking fatties with big racks to lick the black. Johnny Vegas in drag. Well, you'd imagine him to look like a soap. To spit even black. Got a bin bag slung over me shoulder. For every sin that I haven't yet atoned for. Same reason I got a nine over and a bang in the back of the bowl of hats holding. Yeah, yeah.
You've been listening to last year's recording of the second annual May Day dinner and panel in Guelph, titled Speaking from the Forefront of the Struggle for Immigrant and Migrant Justice and Workers' Rights. The event was organized by Fuerza Puerza, a migrant worker justice group in Guelph. The group's contact is fuerza.puerza@gmail.com. That's fuerza.puerza@gmail.com. This panel featured the following speakers representing the independent, humanitarian, solidarity-based organizations, No One Is Illegal, Toronto, Canadian Humanitarian Appeal for the Relief of Tamils, or Canadian HART, the acronym H-A-R-T, Migrante Ontario, and the Communist Party of Canada. We hope you have learned and or relearned a great deal. One clear message this panel relayed is, do people experiencing forced migration want status for all? Yes, but we want more. We want imperialist countries, imperialist cultures, imperialist-minded people, and imperialist attitudes and behaviors to stop forcing us to leave our homes in the first place. We want peace in our homeland. We want imperialist corporations and states and the people that back them to stop committing ecocide, polluting and exploiting and killing our homelands, making it unlivable for us. We do not want to be infected with a pathological culture that is killing our sanity and physically killing ourselves and our friends, all our loved ones, and all other beings. Another clear message relayed is that there is no better time than now to use one's citizenship and sanity to help protect the most exploited groups of people and other repressed and deprivileged working class and poor people in Canada. While at the same time, it is also important to recognize that citizenship is not a measure of a human being's worth, potentials, capabilities, etc. Thank you for listening to a recording of the 2010 May Day dinner and panel discussion held in Guelph, Ontario, on Migrant Matters Radio.
See, I got the saffron, I got the eye, kid, I got the catch pajamas, and